Welcome to Hawk Weekly.
Hello, everyone. I'm Jonathan.
I'm Crystal.
And this is Haunt Weekly, a weekly podcast for the haunted attraction industry. Whether you're a big haunt, a small home haunt, an actor, owner, or just plain aficionado, we aim to be the podcast for you, the weekly podcast for you. It's kind of in the title.
It is. And there are other podcasts out there.
There are, but we aim to, you know...
We're weekly, though.
We shoot to be the podcast. And honestly, there's so many great haunted attraction podcasts out there.
Yeah.
We're setting a lofty goal for ourselves.
We are.
That's kind of what that intro is about. I don't think we're there yet, but we shoot for the moon, and that way, if we miss, we land among the stars.
You're really going with that cliche.
I might have spent a lot of time with crappy guidance counselors as a kid.
It sounds like it. It shows.
It shows. Pop culture life advice from Haunt Weekly, your podcast. Okay, how are you doing this week, Crystal? How are you doing?
Pretty good.
Yeah, it's getting to be the latter part of March.
Yeah.
Most haunts, if they're not already ramping up their efforts, are beginning to ramp up construction and other work.
Yes.
So it's a busy, busy time for a lot of haunts, I know.
Yeah, this post will be going live on Easter Sunday of this year.
Oh my God, that's right.
So maybe they'll be taking day off.
Maybe some of them. I'll avoid my usual zombie jokes for Easter.
And there you go.
And then we just lost half our audience.
Yeah, that's how Jonathan says, I have nothing to say, and then says a lot of stuff.
And one of our two listeners just totally unsubscribed from the podcast. But yeah, okay. And if they didn't unsubscribe from that... This week's topic
as fun as our one on safety.
Yeah. This one, okay, we're talking about ethics this week. Ethics and haunting. And it's a very, very difficult issue for a lot of reasons, but we wanted to talk about it because our previous news episode 16, went a wee bit off the rails.
Yeah, a little bit.
And the reason it went off the rails is one of the news articles we covered was an article on Cracked. I know, the arbiter of all things hard-hitting news, Cracked magazine.
Yeah.
They covered, among an article about people exploiting tragedies, a bunch of haunted attractions that were basically exploiting real-life serial killers, and very modern ones in most cases.
Right.
And that caused our podcast then to jump off the tracks a little bit. And we said, oh, we're going to come back to this. We're going to come back to this. And we say we're going to come back to this and do an episode on this all the time on this podcast.
Yeah.
It might as well be the subtitle.
Right. But this one's really important, so we made sure to cover it next.
And the other part of it was, you and I, because we talk about haunting outside of the podcast. I don't know if that's ever occurred to our listeners. But we do quite a bit. And we haven't been able to shut up about this problem for the entirety of this week. So I think we both kind of just figured, look, let's do the podcast. Maybe we'll be able to move on from it. And maybe we'll actually complete the promise of doing a full episode on a topic for once in the history of this damn podcast.
Well, it is only episode 17, so we've got a lot of time.
Not a lot of time, but... Now, one thing I want to be clear is even though we're talking about ethics, we're not... talking about safety, at least not directly.
Right.
Excuse me. And the reason we're not talking about safety is because that's always your top priority, both ethically and legally.
Yeah.
It's kind of silly. We've done one full episode on safety already. It'll be a topic we revisit many times, I'm sure. See, there I go doing it again.
Yes, but that was revisit. That wasn't just, you know, we're going
to
do it.
Safety is an important one. We have to do more on safety. And I definitely want to talk more about it in the not-too-distant future, next Sunday AD.
Yes.
But if you got the reference, you're officially my new best friend. you're my new best friend. But basically, yeah, so we will come back and talk more about safety, but we're talking about ethics and haunting and not safety involving ethics. So we're talking a lot here about things that hurt feelings and things that, you know, cause trauma beyond what one would expect from a haunted attraction.
Right.
And the reason I say this is because a haunted attraction is meant, first and foremost, to be fun.
It's an entertainment industry.
We are supposed to be...
supposed to be entertaining.
Yeah, we're supposed to be entertaining. And sure, a roller coaster that jumps the tracks and crashes into a crowd of people below would be really exciting. But it'd be exciting in the wrong way.
Let's not do that.
Let's not do that. So the main thing here is we want to ensure with this that people are having fun and that this is an enjoyable experience.
Right.
So let's start with where the Cracked article dropped us off.
All right.
All right, because it seems like a good place to start because we've got a lot of ground to cover this episode. Yeah. I'm really kind of curious if we're going to be able to get through the entire show notes we drafted on this. In the hour. And I've already killed like 6 minutes here.
Yeah, I know. It's like, maybe not.
Not if he keeps babbling.
Pretty much, that was the look you got.
Yeah, okay. But real life serial killers and real life tragedies.
Yes.
This is a silly, touchy area for haunts.
It is. Because, I mean, a lot of people who are into horror are also into serial killers and learning about them and figuring out what made them that way.
Yeah.
You know?
We, especially in the haunting / horror community, have this really weird obsession. I don't want to say a glorification, but an obsession with serial killers.
Yeah. Yeah.
Because they're the real life terrors.
Yeah, I took some extra psychology classes in college to try to figure out some of that stuff. So,
well, and it's one of those things that the media also helps drive home. And as haunters, we know that real-life serial killers are an instant, easy button you can push.
Right.
Especially if you've got, like, a local legend serial killer. Like, if we were back in South Carolina, I would, say Pee Wee Gaskins.
Right.
Would be a good subject matter. You might have heard a little bit about him while you were there. He was a little bit before you got there.
Yeah.
But he was a pretty famous local serial killer. And every region has somebody like that.
Right.
That maybe was not a national story, but was a local one. Mm-hmm. But the problem with using a lot of real-life serial killers is that victims and families of victims are still alive often.
Right.
And as we discussed last week, there was a haunt in Sacramento, I think it was.
Yeah.
Where the family, they were using one of those local serial killers as the fodder. And the result was some relatives of the victims.
The husband.
The husband in one case. One of them. Came forward and said, "You are simulating my wife's murder."
Yeah.
"For other people's enjoyment."
Yeah.
That's
just icky.
That's wrong. I mean, yeah. I'm sorry. It's like I said, we are in an entertainment industry here.
Right.
And one of the things about it is we're not in any way educational.
No.
No,
we're not trying to teach people about the history of serial killers and especially in these style haunts, there's not some, meaning thrown in at the end.
Yeah.
Like they went to prison and got, the death sentence or anything like that.
Yeah, we're not here, we're not documentary filmmakers.
No.
We're not even like Nightline TV programming here.
No.
You know, we are purely for entertainment. At the end of the day, what we provide is, scares for smiles and laughs.
Yep.
And there's nothing that's a smile or a laugh about seeing the murder of someone you loved reenacted.
Right.
And that really, really, when I was reading that article, I actually got really upset about that idea.
Yeah, it's pretty much, will piss off anybody that has, some moral compass and some value of human life.
Yeah.
Because if you value life, then seeing how people died realistically portrayed while their families are alive is just not right.
Yeah. And we've talked about it before in other episodes, but this is part of our industry, at least a segment of our industries, edging toward more and more extreme stuff.
Yeah.
I mean, we talk about the Bikini Man or the Blackout and all that, but also it's the theme thing, too. It was, I mean, Rob Zombie's Great American Nightmare is one of the haunts listed in the article. They had a John Wayne Gacy room.
Yes. I believe that his haunt had other serial killers as well, but that was the one that the article focused on.
Yeah, because it was the most immediately recognizable.
Right.
Now, another area, though, that's in a similar vein is local tragedies of some sort.
Right.
We're in New Orleans. The local tragedy everyone fixates on, obviously, is Hurricane Katrina.
Right.
Lots of death, lots of destruction, terrible time for the city. Nearly everybody I know that was around before the storm either knew someone who died, lost a significant amount of their property, or both.
Or moved,
yeah.
Yeah, a lot of them don't live here anymore.
Yeah, and
we're the crazy ones that stayed.
Yes, we did. Well, we were also the lucky ones that didn't suffer any significant damage. I mean, would it have worked out differently if our house had been completely flooded?
Yes.
Probably. I mean, I shudder to think that, but the answer is probably.
Yeah, because, I mean, here's the thing, is that whenever we got the warning, we thought we were going to be back to work in 2 days.
Yeah.
Because that's what had happened every other time.
That was the pattern of hurricanes. Yeah, you miss a day of work.
So we didn't take anything, any memorabilia or of significant sentimental value with us.
We just took basically what we needed to survive for a week away.
Yeah.
And then it got real. Luckily, like I said, our home was spared.
Yeah.
And we were able to return, and we were actually able to return pretty quickly. But, yeah, everyone I know, we're the odd man out in that regard.
Yeah.
I mean, words cannot describe how fortunate I feel.
Yeah, and it's odd because every year when you work outside, you know, when you work in an area where there's other people around, so not in the house, basically. Yeah. When you work in an office, when you work in a store or whatever, you know when the anniversary is coming up because everybody starts talking about it and there's a melancholy. Yeah. It comes over the place.
Even now, I mean, we're approaching the 11th year anniversary of it. So yeah, even the House of Shock here in New Orleans never played off that theme. They mentioned it, but they mentioned it in the context of the damage they took.
Right.
They didn't make it part of the haunt. They mentioned it as part of, you know, we're back. Even Hurricane Katrina couldn't stop us.
Yeah.
You know, which is...
Yeah, because they took significant damage.
Yeah, they did. They were closed in 2005 because of that. They reopened 2006.
Well, I think that at HauntCon last year, Ross had mentioned that they actually did open their doors, but nobody was there because they didn't really advertise they were open.
Yeah,
so
but I did not hear...
Yeah, it's... So technically...
I did not hear word one about them being open.
That
and
year,
we were very active at that point already in attending haunts.
Right.
So I would like to pretend I would have known, but honestly, it's entirely possible.
Yeah.
Because we didn't know anybody at that time. We were still, we were still fairly new in town, to be completely honest.
Yeah.
But yeah, so those things, messing with those things, yes, they are buttons you can press on people.
Right.
But is it really ethical?
Is it worth it?
It feels exploitative to me.
It feels exploitative and, you know, you're going to lose some customers if you do that.
Yeah. You're going to lose customers and, you know, I get, like I said, we've trended toward edginess in this industry. And the House of Shock here in town was one of the pioneers of that, going back 25 years or so, with their satanic themes and the protest and all that. They were on the forefront of that edginess a couple decades ago. But what's weird about that is they got their edginess from the satanic panic of the late 80s, early 90s. The satanic panic was a fake panic. It was a real panic in that people were scared of it.
Yeah, and there were rumors at all the schools, because I know, because I had them at my school, had them at the daycare that I went to, you know.
Oh, yeah, rumors. And in that regard, I think the Satanic Panic falls under legends.
Right.
Which is something that's totally cool to exploit.
Yeah.
Exploit the hell out of legends, as long as there are no real bodies.
Right.
Exploit the hell out of them.
Well, if there, as long as there's no real bodies and you're not specifically showing particular people.
Yeah. You know, but you see what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Exploit the legends, because those are legends. They're fake.
Yeah.
It's just a narrative that's sprung up somehow.
Right.
You can totally take advantage of that.
Yeah, and you can say that the person, the character in your haunt is a serial killer, as long as it's not based off of a real...
Yeah, well, there is one possible exception to that, though.
Yeah.
And that is, and this is just something, I wanted to chat about this with you. We've had some conversation. I don't have the answer here.
I know.
What is the expiration date on a tragedy?
Yeah.
Now, I asked this question because there's a photo that's been circulating on the internet for some time. And it's one of those inflatable slides.
Right.
Like you see everywhere. But of the HMS Titanic.
Yeah.
And the caption is, this is what a tragedy looks like 100 years later.
Yeah.
And the question is, what will like 9/11 be like in 100 years? Will we have like Twin Towers, the ride at an amusement park or something?
Oh, gosh.
Yeah, we shudder to think about that now, but the Titanic was something akin to that type of moment.
Yeah. I think it will be...
But yeah, I mean, is there an expiration date on tragedy? Because we talk about no serial killers, right?
Yeah.
Yet 13th Gate has Jack the Ripper.
Right.
A bunch of haunts have Jack the Ripper, actually.
That's that is, you know, I think that he has reached his ex. I mean, because, okay, here's the thing about Jack the Ripper.
Okay.
There is part history there.
Mm-hmm.
He was a
real serial killer, yes.
He was not captured. He killed a lot of people, or some women.
Mm-hmm.
But he's also a lot legend.
Yes, I'll agree with that.
So
but still, if you had done a haunted attraction starring Jack the Ripper while the murders were going on or just after they had stopped, it still would have been uncouth.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, they would have thought that you were possibly him or her.
it would be insanely out of touch to do that.
Right.
When does a tragedy expire? And mm-hmm. We were talking about this with Ellie.
Right.
And she...
She's our resident ethics person.
Resident ethicist who unfortunately is in St. Louis here. And not able to be a part of this podcast. Yeah. She actually would be really, really good on this show.
Yeah.
Well, we do the whole thing with Ellie later. We'll just bring her on and redo the whole damn podcast. Episode 17.5, the same topic with Ellie. It'll be great.
Yeah.
But she suggested the copyright term.
Right.
Which is, once the last person dies... Plus 70 years.
Yeah.
And, okay, I see that. Or maybe like 100 years, but or like what I talked about with the Titanic, that's what made me think of the 100 years thing.
Right.
But yeah, it's obvious that no matter how bad the tragedy is...
Yeah.
There's a point where the sting is worn off, I guess?
So that was my question. Is there any tragedy that is so horrible that it should never be covered?
Well, we don't have enough distance from, like, the Holocaust to make it.
Oh,
no. We're only 50 years removed. That people that suffered the Holocaust are still alive.
Yeah.
That is probably the best candidate, but we won't know probably until we're long gone.
Yeah.
That, you know what I mean? That's as close as I can get to one where I think immediately, yeah, that's the tragedy that will never be made light of.
Yeah.
That's as close as I get.
Except for historical documentaries.
Yeah, let's not talk about like the History Channel, please.
No.
But, you know.
Yeah.
No, and the other question I have is it ever acceptable to exploit these? Because... haunts obviously do exploit real-life serial killers, and including some that are fairly popular and fairly well-respected.
Right.
I mean, is it okay to do if you're trying to be that edgy? If that's your goal, is to be edgy and push those boundaries, is it okay? And my view is this. What do you think?
Yeah.
I'll say this. I think if you want to have an edgy haunt, there are better ways to be edgy than to exploit someone else's real-life tragedy.
I would agree with that.
I can think of much better ways to be edgy. And some of them we listed in this, actually. Yeah.
We're getting to them.
But yeah, I mean, is it ever acceptable? I don't know. I mean, I get that, like, the Great American Nightmare and so forth is trying to be edgy, trying to be more abrasive, trying to be, you know, akin to, like, what the House of Shock was 20-odd years ago.
Right.
I get that. But at the same time, with the same breath I say that, I think Rob Zombie, with his films, mm-hmm. has proved you can be really damned edgy without invoking real-life tragedies.
Right.
I mean, watch The Devil's Rejects and tell me that's not one edgy damn film.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Well, that's very true. And, you know, and his quote, he's quoted as saying that the Gacy room, he just set it up because he thought it was funny.
Which is a pretty sad reason to set up a room, period, in a haunted attraction. But
yeah,
but to exploit real life. Because that's just it. People who are alive today lost loved ones to John Wayne Gacy.
Right.
And yes, there may not be many of them.
Yeah.
But here's the thing, and this is something that we do, and I know others have done, like, you know, you can take a serial killer
yeah.
and take the elements of that killer that made him so scary
right.
and cast him into a new character.
Right.
A, that way you own the damn character.
Yeah.
Copyright, bitches!
Some cursing may occur during this podcast.
Oh, please. Some. But you know what I mean? So, A, you own the character, and B, you're not, you know what I mean, you're not so directly impacting the victims.
Right. And actually, Kyle ran into this, too, with his tours.
Mm-hmm.
Because there was a murder here not long after Katrina.
Yeah.
Where a guy basically cooked his girlfriend.
Yeah. It was a murder-suicide, if I remember correctly.
Yeah. Well, he lived off of her for a while. Mm-hmm. He ate her nightly. But anyway, it he doesn't talk about that on his haunted tours usually.
It's too soon.
Because it's too soon and it leaves everybody really depressed.
Yeah, that was 11 years ago.
Because I asked him if he was going to talk about it.
Yeah, and most of the stuff he talks about on the ghost tour are, as you would imagine, are from
1800s,
early 1900s yeah. in some cases. I don't think he talks about anything before the Great Depression.
No.
I believe that's pretty accurate for the cutoff on that. So, yeah. 100 years!
Yeah.
100 years pretty much again. Okay. Maybe we're hitting our answer even if not realizing
yeah.
it.
Yeah.
All right, well, let's move on.
Okay.
Because we could talk about the use of real-life tragedies
yeah.
in haunts all day. And there's
apparently we can.
I didn't know if we could fill the whole hour with that. I actually thought about making just the show notes that part. But said, no, we need some other stuff to talk about.
Okay.
But we probably should move on, honestly, before we depress ourselves. Okay. Ethics within the haunt itself. We talked about backstory. We talked about the characters within the haunt.
Right.
The haunt itself. As we all know, the purpose of a haunted attraction is to scare people.
Yes.
And to scare people in a way that they find enjoyable.
Yes.
Some haunts, and I've seen this a couple times, have taken to really playing with hard phobias.
Yeah, and, you know, when we were first starting out 10 years ago with our haunt, you know, we would dream of the big haunt we would have someday, and we played with some of these ideas, too.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
We've learned since that it's probably not such a great idea.
I mean, here's the thing that I believe. Mm-hmm. There are certain phobias that if you have them,
mm-hmm.
you shouldn't be going to a damn haunted attraction anyway.
Yeah.
If you have claustrophobia, fear of the dark, stuff like that, a haunted attraction might, or the fear of being startled, a haunted attraction may not be the ideal evening for you.
Right, yeah. I have a coworker who will not come to our haunt this year because she's afraid of the dark.
You see, and that's
completely reasonable. And I told her that ours is lighted very well, though.
Yes, we do a very good job of lighting. Thank you.
You can see it, ours.
You will see exactly what we want you to see, is the thing, though.
Well, yeah, that's in every
That's every haunt.
Okay,
I know.
That's every haunt that knows how to light.
No, it was not in the Revelation.
Oh my God. Anyway.
That's a different story. We should do a whole podcast about the worst haunt we've ever been to.
Oh gosh.
We could fill an hour on that one.
We could. I'm adding it to the notes. Let's get back to this one.
But what about like less common fears that maybe you do not have a reasonable expectation of every haunt? Spiders, snakes are common ones.
Elevators.
Yeah, the story there, while she fills it in, is we dragged a friend of ours to the 13K.
Okay, we did not drag a friend of ours. Okay, we invited a cast member
of our haunt, yes.
Of our haunt to go with us to the 13th gate.
Absolutely.
Which was number one on the list. She was really excited about it.
And she couldn't get to Baton Rouge, and we were able to get her there. It was really great, really great. Yeah. We get there, and we're telling her about the elevators, which is the opening sequence. Yeah. And she grabs my arms. Elevators? And I'm like, yeah, elevator. It's really cool. It has a thing, all this great stuff going.
If you're listening to this, I'm so sorry. But
it was hilarious. And it's like, I'm so scared of elevators. And it turns out her two fears in the world are elevators and snakes, both of which are prominent in the 13th gate, which is what got me thinking. Yeah. It's actually her that got me thinking about this exact element of this topic.
Yeah.
The question I had, and this is just something that I, once again, this is me tossing it out, and maybe not even to just you, to the world.
Right.
When do you warn about specific phobias?
Well, I don't think, like with hers, there's no way to have known that that was going to happen. There is no way to have known that she was going to be that scared.
Of an elevator.
Yeah. And my roommate in college was scared of plants.
Exactly. And I saw a Maury Povich where a girl was scared to death of cucumbers.
Not even on touch.
Oh, no, but I'm sorry. It wasn't cucumbers. It was pickles. It's not cucumbers. It was pickles that was the problem.
Yes, because that show is completely believable.
It was a very dill problem.
Oh, God.
Good night, everybody. This podcast is over. But no, I mean, and...
You know, and we also took someone who was very scared of bees.
Mm-hmm.
And they have a bee room at the 13th gate. This person was not triggered, even though they are phobically scared of bees. Tells you something about the bee room at the 13th gate.
Not effective, guys. I've been saying this for years publicly.
Sorry.
Sorry, guys. Your bee room just is a B-.
It's the Jonathan Jokes Show.
Apparently. So, yeah, it's just a thought exercise, though. I don't necessarily want any answers unless I have any answers.
Right.
But when, you know, you're doing something because, okay... There's a difference between people who are icked out by spiders and people that have an honest-to-God phobia of them.
Right.
Everybody, I think, is reasonably nervous around spiders and snakes.
See, I think...
Unless you're the type that, like, loves them.
Yeah, well, I...
Which point, freak!
Well, I think that is so not true.
It is not true. I agree. I'm just...
Especially not in this industry. Shame on you. Anyway... So I think that people who have the really bad phobias, where they will go into shock or whatever, probably know not to go to haunted houses.
Well,
I don't think that the warning's necessary.
Okay, what if your fear is a fear of heights? I would not reasonably expect simulated heights in a haunted attraction.
I would not either. And I know this... Because I just went through one with that.
Mm-hmm. But you know what I mean.
I know exactly what you mean.
So, if someone with a fear of heights goes to a haunted house and has a simulated height effect...
Right.
Like what we saw at the one in San Antonio.
Right.
Maybe a warning or an alternate path is due.
Yeah, that's possible. And here's how to get in ethical trouble with that.
Okay.
Is like having two doors.
Mm-hmm.
You have a choice. And you have one that says, go underground, or one that says, go up high. And then you switch the rooms for the doors.
So the people that have the underground phobia end up going underground, literally.
Yes.
Yeah, and...
That would be, you know...
Yeah, and... But, yeah, no, it's a question I have because there are some phobias which obviously, you know, to avoid haunted attractions.
Right.
And some that are less obvious.
Yeah.
So I'm not answering that question right now. I don't have it. But in a similar vein and getting a little more hard than phobias are PTSD triggers.
Right.
This is really difficult because PTSD is endemic in our society.
Yeah.
And I listed in our show notes just a bunch of types of PTSD triggers we've seen. And that I've actually seen in haunted attractions, actually. Rape sequences, or simulated rape sequences, yeah. I should say. Combat sequences, simulated traffic accidents.
Right.
And child death injury, etc.
And loud noises, gunshots, which is a very common one.
Now, here's
the loud noise, gunshot, and the flashing light that goes with it is very common.
It is a very common one, especially among combat vets.
Yep.
And, like, rape scenes, very common PTSD trigger in rape victims.
Yeah.
Traffic accidents, anyone who's had a bad car accident recently, was seriously injured, may have PTSD about that. And here's the thing. Loud noises, I would probably know to avoid haunted attractions if I'm PTSD triggered by loud bangs.
Right.
Haunted house, not best place for me. But would you reasonably expect a rape sequence or a simulated traffic accident?
I think that for those things, the haunts should advertise themselves as an extreme adults-only haunt.
Okay.
And I think that if you have to categorize the industry somewhat in order to know that, hey, you might see that there.
Yeah. Well, I mean, and you see there are haunts out there. I know House of Shock does it here. I've also seen on the Rise and a few others. Well, they'll have the really long warning list.
Right.
Warning, flashing lights, because I didn't even put that one in here. Epileptic.
Right.
Strobe lights in use, fog in use for those with allergies to that.
Right.
Do you also include PTSD sensitivities on that?
Yeah.
I think that might be a good thing to actually consider adding in a lot of these cases. But the problem is, it can be almost impossible to predict what will trigger people.
Yeah, no kidding.
Because if you're going to be triggered by pickles, I can't help you.
Yeah, exactly.
I mean,
yeah.
If Smuckers is going to...
And that's just it. People are triggered by different things. And I think that there are some things, like the ones you listed, that are, you know, they could trigger a majority of the population. And I think that that's the key, is that if it could possibly trigger the majority of people, then you probably want to list it in your warnings.
Yeah, definitely if it can trigger most people. And if it can trigger a significant minority very, very seriously,
right,
you probably want to list it too.
Yeah.
Now, customer interaction, I just wanted to briefly touch on this one. Get it? Touch on this one? We talked about touch versus no touch haunts before.
Right.
The issue here is, as we've discussed before, no one can consent to be assaulted.
Right.
And so that raises the issue of safe words and how do you respond, both in touch versus no touch haunts, to when people need to be safe. They need safety.
Yeah.
How do you respond?
Yeah. I mean, we actually do have a safe word for our haunt.
Yeah, we have about a 25% dropout rate, I believe.
Yeah, this last year we were racking it up. Than ever. And yeah, but anyway, you know, there is a safe word in our haunt, and as soon as somebody says it, the stalker, which is me, drops the character and escorts them back out the front. And we do that so that they don't see the rest of the haunt and they're not traumatized further by going through the rest of the haunt.
Yeah,
because if, you know, they decide that they're going to be even more scared and start running, well, the actors all the way through might not get the message that we're escorting somebody out.
Yeah, I agree.
Now, I know that, you know,
obviously,
bigger
haunts
have...
emergency exits.
Right, emergency exits and rabbit runs.
And egress corridors and so forth.
Yeah.
Yeah, and actor runs. And that's a much better system.
Right.
It's just we're a small garage haunt. We have one path through it. We have a few actor cut-throughs, but...
Right.
those are kind of our secret.
Yeah. You
know, we don't share those where those are.
No.
We hide them pretty goddamn well, I might add.
Yeah, nobody can tell.
But the...
I'm very good at hiding.
But yeah, I mean, to me, that's one of the things that's very important when we're talking about the phobias and the PTSD triggers, is that determining when to warn is important.
Right.
But also giving people a chance to opt out and to drop their consent.
Right.
And respecting that is very important too.
Yeah. And this also ties into the haunts that allow you to buy, you know, the little glow bracelet or whatever
to signify more aggressive,
that you want a more intense experience.
Yeah, that comes with its own set of problems.
It does. But it is consenting to be
touched and handled more aggressively.
More aggressive experience, but not to be assaulted still. Right.
Yeah, there's still an issue there. Okay.
There's a line.
There is a line. Sexual content and haunts. Oh, man, this is an interesting one.
It is.
Tagline for the show, this might have to be another breakout episode.
Yeah.
Because there's a lot to parse through, and we've only got like 15 minutes left or so in this podcast. But sex and nudity and haunting.
Yeah.
We have seen, like, with some of these more extreme ones, like the Black Album has fully nude women in it. The question is this. When do you warn that a haunt is intended for adults, and when do you go as far as to actively block underage children from coming? Because there has to... Because, hey, let me give an example, okay?
Okay.
House of Shock a few years ago.
Mm-hmm.
And this may have just been a rogue actor.
Right.
I really don't know how this happened. But they had the Mardi Gras, or the Bourbon Street sequence. Had a girl up in a balcony in a skirt. You could look up her skirt because you're on the ground. And she was rubbing her crotch on the face of a dummy.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I'm an adult. I have no issue with this. She was cute. I'm teasing. But I have no issue with this. But House of Shock theoretically is an all-ages haunt.
Right.
Though they do warn that it is intended for mature audiences.
Right. And they've got a reputation.
And I don't think they really crossed the line there. But I'm just saying that's an example to think about.
Well, and I mean, we actually said in our review of Mortuary last year that there were a lot of nude mannequins.
Yes, there were.
There weren't a lot of real, live women that were nude, but there were a lot of realistic mannequins that were nude.
Yeah. And there was the lust sequence, which was very, very sexualized, too.
Right. And we routinely see teenagers and younger at that haunt.
Yeah, that haunt. And I remember that year was also the year that the party bus dropped off all the kids.
Right.
At the mortuary.
Yeah. I mean, that was this past year.
And that was 2015, yeah.
Yeah.
So, yeah, that may have necessitated a stronger warning than was given.
Yeah, because previously they had not incorporated nudity or sex at all.
They had done, the sexiest thing they had were the succubi.
Right.
Who were just dressed in like belly dancer costumes, you would say.
Well, there was that. There was, the vampirous one year. There was,
basically these were characters.
Schoolgirls one year.
But these were characters dressed in sexy-ish outfits.
Right.
But most
trying to lure you in, but not really getting close.
Yeah, they were characters. Yeah, they were characters. Not too much skin, not nudity, not anything. I would comfortably take, definitely a teenager to that, no problem. And I'm sure the characters, I never went through the haunt with a kid, but I'm pretty sure the characters would tone it down if a child were present.
Right.
Mannequins are naked.
Yes. Anatomically correct mannequins.
Are going to be naked no matter who's going through the haunt.
Right.
Now, this all begs the question, though. Why would you include sexual content at all in a haunt? I think the reason for that is you can't, with a haunt, just do scare.
Right.
You've got to have something to bring them back. Humor, as we talked about at HauntCon, can be very, very powerful. That a joke, make them laugh.
Right.
It calms them down, brings them back in.
Right.
Sexiness and sexuality can do that as well.
Right.
But, yeah, it's risky because if you push that boundary too far, you pretty much become adults only.
Yeah.
And that cuts out a significant portion of your audience.
Right. And there's one thing that, one angle on this that you didn't cover yet, or that we haven't covered yet, is that haunt that was offering for patrons to go in nude.
Oh, yes. I remember
or that. In their underwear.
Yes.
They could go in nude or in their underwear. They wound up opting to make everybody go through in their underwear. There were a lot of people very upset about it.
Yeah, they basically what happened is, if I remember this correctly, is they'd advertised as you would go through it nude.
Yeah.
You could. You had the option.
You could. You or didn't, you didn't go through it the chicken way, which is in your underwear. Yeah.
But or clothed. And you could do it. You had the option to be fully clothed. But obviously the interest was in doing it nude.
Right.
Because it was something new and novel.
Right.
And the county, I believe it was, they were in, said, right, we can't stop you, but we're really going to be...
We really wish you wouldn't do that, yeah, and we'll try to make your life miserable.
Finger wagging going on here.
Yeah.
And they backed down and made everyone who go through it and lease their underwear.
Right.
So, yeah, that's another issue, is about the patrons. Yeah, that's a good point.
Yeah.
The final topic I have, and we're reaching our final 8 minutes or so of this. Oh, you know, we have a little flexibility.
So we're running quickly through these last ones.
No, not terribly quickly. We can all do right. this.
Anyway.
But ethics and marketing.
Oh.
This one is an interesting one for me, because I've come from a marketing background.
Right.
In marketing, we have a term called puffery.
Yeah.
Which puffery is... boasts that are unprovable that everyone uses in marketing. Every haunt claims to be the scariest in their area. Every haunt claims to be the biggest, the baddest, the best, whatever. That's
most
puffery.
Scares per square foot.
Yeah, no, puffery is a thing. And everyone does that.
Right.
But the problem is, a lot of haunts, I can name one in San Antonio that this seems to apply to, tend to overpromise.
Yeah.
Multi-million dollar haunted attraction.
It's for the name.
It's, yeah.
It really was.
Or in the building, I'm sure. The building was, I'm sure it was ridiculously expensive.
Yeah.
I mean, there is a way to really overpromise your haunt.
Right.
And the thing about it is this, if you have a cheesy-er haunt...
Yeah.
It can still be a lot of fun. People go and watch low-budget films
all
the time. Look at the movie industry. There's plenty of room for budget horrors. There's plenty of room for stuff.
Right. Well, and that's just it. When we're going through haunted houses, I like the charity and the smaller ones possibly a little bit better. Just because I can relax and have more fun and enjoy it a little bit more.
Yeah.
Whereas I'm going through a pro haunt, I'm looking, oh, that's so cool. How'd they do that? That looks awesome.
Yeah.
You know, it's a different scale that I'm judging it on.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You know.
I agree. Yeah, but the problem is, if you overpromise what the haunt is...
Oh, you're going to get bad reviews.
You sell it too hard. You charge too much.
Yeah.
You oversell what you have. You're going to tick people off. And that's going to hurt both your haunt and the industry as a whole. The flip side of the coin is, you can't underpromise.
Right.
And people go to the haunt expecting a cheesy little home haunt. And then when the first drop panel hits, they crap their pants.
Yeah.
That guy's got the right idea. You wore the brown pants today.
Yes.
I'm totally using Deadpool's line front of house this year, by the way. I've already I've already planned on that. That's totally happening.
But it seems appropriate for that
it
situation.
Does. And for Bernie too, it seems really appropriate. But that's the thing, is I think with the marketing of a haunt, and the marketing of anything, truthfully, but the marketing of a haunt especially, since a haunt is an unknown.
Yeah.
When I buy a Big Mac at McDonald's, I know what I'm getting.
Right.
When I buy a ticket to a haunted attraction, by design, I don't know exactly what I'm getting.
Right.
So that makes it really, really crucial to not over or under promise.
Right.
And that's very, very difficult for haunts to do. The idea is that your marketing should not give away anything.
Right.
But should give people a very accurate idea of what to expect once they're inside.
Right.
And so I constantly see these haunts advertised where 50,000 square feet of, you know, professionally designed sets. Looking at you, Revelation.
So I'm just wondering, why can't more haunts do, like, cliffhanger commercials?
Mm-hmm.
You know, to make you want to go and see how the story ends. See what the story is all about.
You know,
yes, that just popped into my brain. I'm sorry, it's random.
No, but it's somewhat relevant. I think part of the problem is, as an industry, and I say this from watching, I every year, this is, I don't know if I even told you I do this.
Yeah.
Every year, right as we approach September, right as the haunt commercials start appearing, start airing,
right,
I hop on YouTube because nearly every haunted attraction,
oh yeah,
posts their commercial on YouTube. Which you should flipping do, for the record.
And you should make commercials for them.
And I like to watch what other haunts are doing other across the country.
Right.
And I'll just punch in haunted house commercial on YouTube and set up a little playlist and go for it.
Yeah.
And then it doesn't take long. They're commercials, like 30 seconds each, right? So we have a very formulaic style in our promotion.
Yeah.
Basically, we all follow the Monster Jam principle for advertising. Come Sunday, Sunday, Sunday!
We will scare you, we promise!
Exactly. The scariest haunted house in Insert City!
Yes.
It's one of those deals where it's like, oh God.
Can just hear the voiceover on the template.
And that's one of the things about it is, after doing like 10 commercials back to back,
right,
I just, it kind of gets formulaic, man. And
every
once in a while you'll see a haunt. Maybe this next year I'll make sure to pull some aside that I think are doing really good work. But
yeah. Well, I know for a while 13th Gate was doing like a mini series of different videos,
which is weird because their marketing stinks in so many other ways.
Yeah, they had a really good guy on crew. I don't know if he's still there. I didn't see him last year.
But so much else of their marketing I don't like. Like, I don't like their website.
Yeah.
At all.
Yeah.
Just sorry, guys. I don't. I love your haunt, but I can't stand your website.
Yeah, well, you know.
But, you know, and that we've already, that's a previous episode. Go look it up. Episode number, insert number here.
Yeah.
We talked about on the Trenton websites. But yeah, the main thing is we want to avoid disappointing fans. Disappoint fans, it hurts both your haunt, it hurts the whole industry.
Right.
And basically it makes Jonathan sad at the end of the day. It makes me very, very sad.
Yeah.
And because here's, and like we said at the beginning, this is supposed to be fun.
Yeah. I mean, we went to, one year we went to two or three haunts, I think two haunts in Mississippi. And we came back and it was, you know, early October, and we felt like Halloween was dead that year because they were so bad.
Yeah,
I'm sorry, guys. But that year, it was just rough.
It was.
It was really rough.
It was.
But we went to Lafitte, I think, the next night.
Yeah.
Because we did one Friday night, and then we went over to Lafitte Saturday because they were like, we got to have some fun and get the spirit back.
Yeah, and Lafitte, by the way, is a good example. I wish they didn't do it last year. Makes me so sad. But they were a great example of a charity / you know, small haunt done beautifully. And really, really fun. And how you can have a lot of fun and sell, I think, a lot of flipping tickets.
Yeah, and still be appropriate for all ages.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean,
It's like the difference between listening to hardcore rap and Will Smith's rap.
Yeah. Exactly. You've got to have that market segmentation a little bit there.
Yeah.
But yeah, I mean, what it comes down to at the end of the day is this is an entertainment industry.
Yeah.
We are, at the end of the day, a frivolity.
Yeah.
There's nothing wrong with being a frivolity.
No.
We need frivolity. Frivolity is important in its frivolity.
Yes.
That's the biggest pile of crap I think I've ever seen.
It's one up there, yeah.
It's up there. Yeah. But the point remains, we are an entertainment industry. We are a frivolous industry.
Right.
And we're not changing people's lives. We're giving people an experience they enjoy. we change people's lives within our community.
Right, and we give people memories and...
Yeah, we give people memories. Yes.
And I think that we are, for a lot of kids, a coming-of-age experience.
Yeah, I would agree with that. Okay, maybe I underestimated a little bit.
Yeah.
But
if you're, you know, if you're too adult for that experience, then you're not the haunt they're going to have that experience at.
And that's kind of the thing, is that every year, every time I go to a haunt that allows kids, it's inevitable that a little kid starts crying his eyes out.
Yeah.
Gets too scared, starts crying. What happens? Everyone with an earshot of that kid. And kids can scream, man. So, earshot goes a long damn way, is what I'm saying. Yeah. Everyone with an earshot of that kid is brought down.
Yeah.
And they understand the kid's not in real danger. They understand he's upset because the zombie jumped out or whatever.
Yeah.
They get that the kid's okay. But the fact of the matter is, it still brings the energy down. It still hampers everything.
Right.
There's nothing enjoyable about anyone being hurt. But that being said, you can't protect everyone.
Right. No, and the thing is why would you want to cut out a large portion of your market just to be edgier and more extreme? Why would you want to exclude a large portion of the population from being able to visit you?
Yeah, and that stems, I think, largely from trying to cater to that very very active niche of our market that does enjoy those types of haunts. There is a strong niche there.
Yeah.
My personal belief, and I have not done the market research on this, this is my suspicion, is that they are small in number, but they are very lucrative in terms of how many haunts they go to and how they spend their money. So they are potentially a lucrative niche, and that's why we're seeing so many haunts chase them.
Mm-hmm.
But that being said, yeah, you're right. I mean, the haunts that have the broader appeal, like Not Scary Farm and so forth, are the ones that stick around for decades and decades and continue to draw massive crowds and earn some buku bucks.
Yeah.
You know, and the way I think about it is this, though. When it comes to warnings, when it comes to how you approach hurting people, you have two metrics. How many people is it likely to impact, and how severe is the impact going to be?
Right.
If it's likely to impact a very large number of people, or if it's likely to impact a small number of people very seriously, you probably want to warn. Like, if, you know, you have a vertigo tunnel, it may be wise to warn people with very serious vertigo, like real vertigo.
Yeah.
That they don't want to go through it, or at least offer an alternative path.
Yeah.
Because, I mean, vertigo tunnels don't even impact me.
No.
But some people I know really struggle with stuff like that. What's wrong?
Some people would say that's kind of the point of a vertigo tunnel.
But not if it's making you sick and vomiting.
No, because then you just have spinning vomit.
Exactly. And
that's not fun for anybody.
Yeah, and that's just it. Some people, when they get vertigo attacks, literally cannot stop throwing up.
Right. I know.
How does that benefit anyone if they're throwing up in your vertigo tunnel?
Yeah.
I don't want to clean up spinning vomit. It sounds terrible.
I know.
That's like the worst type of vomit.
It does, doesn't it? And it's just being added to because you haven't gotten the person out of it yet.
Exactly.
This is a horrible image to end on. Or a great one. One of those.
But yeah, you have to find that balance between warning about every little thing and warning about nothing. And,
right.
And you know, how you approach your customers. And then also find that balance in what you include. Don't include serial killers that, you know, their victims are still alive.
Yeah.
But, you know, maybe it's okay-ish to include serial killers from centuries gone by.
Yeah.
So, I don't know. It's tough, and a lot of this episode isn't us giving answers. It's just, these are some of the issues.
These are some of the issues to ponder. Think about them carefully when designing your next season.
Designing and promoting and all that jazz for your next season. I agree. Well, I think we're pretty much out of time. We've about hit 55 minutes. We're just a few seconds shy of it. Any final thoughts for the kids listening at home?
No, that's about it.
Well, that sounds good. Well, once again, everyone, I'm Jonathan.
And I'm Crystal.
And this is Haunt Weekly, episode 17, The Ethics of Haunting. Thank you very much for joining us, and we will see you guys next week. Seriously, it's in the name. You should know that part. Right now. It's episode 17, guys. Keep up.